Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Use Tax Collection Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 3, 2015, the Supreme Court decided Direct Marketing Association v. Brohl. This case involves a Colorado law requiring retailers who do not collect Colorado sales or use tax to notify Colorado customers of their use tax liability and to report tax-related information to customers and the Colorado Department of Revenue. A trade association of online retailers filed suit in federal district court to challenge the law and obtain an injunction against its enforcement. On appeal, however, the Tenth Circuit reversed that judgment, holding that the Tax Injunction Act deprived the district court of jurisdiction over the case. The question before the Supreme Court is whether the act did indeed bar the online retailer's suit. In a unanimous opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, the court held that the Tax Injunction Act did not bar the trade association's lawsuit. The judgment of the Tenth Circuit was therefore reversed and the case remanded. Justice Kennedy filed a concurring opinion. Justice Ginsburg filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Breyer joined, and which Justice Sotomayor joined in part. To discuss the case, we have Kristen Gutting, an associate professor of law at the Charleston School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Gutting.
On March 3, 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously held in Direct Marketing Association that the Tax Injunction Act does not bar Direct Marketing Association's federal lawsuit against the Colorado Department of Revenue. The U.S. Supreme Court's holding resolved a circuit split regarding the breadth of the Tax Injunction Act, narrowing the scope of the act. Under the Tax Injunction Act, federal courts shall not enjoin, suspend, or restrain the assessment, levy, or collection of the tax under state law where a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the courts of such state. In 2010, Colorado passed a law imposing three separate and distinct notice and reporting requirements on the out-of-state retailers who did not collect sales and use tax on sales to Colorado customers due to lack of physical presence in Colorado and whose gross sales in Colorado exceeded $100,000. First, Colorado's new law required notice be given by these retailers to its purchasers, informing them at the time of the sale that the use tax may be due and that Colorado requires them to file a sales and use tax return and pay use taxes directly to Colorado. If the notice is not provided, the retailer is subject to a penalty of $5 for each transaction in which it fails to do so. Second, by January 31st of each year, the retailer must provide a report to all Colorado purchasers who bought more than $500 worth of goods from the retailer in the previous year. The report must include a reminder of the use tax filing obligations and provide the dates, amounts, and categories of each purchase. The retailer is subject to a $10 penalty for each report it does not send. And finally, Colorado's new notice and reporting law requires that by March 1st of each year, these retailers must file annual reports with the Colorado Department of Revenue listing the names of their Colorado customers, their known addresses, and the total amount each Colorado customer paid for Colorado purchases in the prior calendar year. Once again, the retailer is subject to a $10 penalty for each customer it fails to list in the report. Thus, in response to Colorado's new notice and reporting law, on June 30, 2010, just 4 months after Colorado enacted the law, Direct Marketing Association sued the Colorado Department of Revenue and its executive director in the U.S. District Court for the District of Colorado. Direct Marketing Association is a trade association of businesses and organizations that market their products directly to consumers via catalog, print ads, broadcast media, and the internet. While Direct Marketing Association challenged Colorado's new notice and reporting law on several grounds, including the Dormant Commerce Clause, free speech, and privacy, the district court stayed all grounds except for Direct Marketing Association's challenge that the new law violated the Dormant Commerce Clause by discriminating against interstate commerce and imposing undue burdens on interstate commerce. Ultimately, in 2012, the district court granted partial summary judgment and thus granted a permanent injunction preventing the Colorado Department of Revenue from enforcing the notice and reporting law. In response to the district court's ruling, the Colorado Department of Revenue appealed to the 10th Circuit, which reversed the district court, holding that the Tax Injunction Act barred Direct Marketing Association from seeking a ruling of constitutionality of the use tax notice and reporting law in federal court. The 10th Circuit stated that if an injunction is allowed, it would limit, restrict, or hold back the state's chosen method of enforcing its tax laws and generating revenue. In response, Direct Marketing Association petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court for a writ of cert, which was granted by the Supreme Court on July 1, 2014, to answer the question whether the Tax Injunction Act bars a federal suit to enjoin enforcement of the notice and reporting law. And on December 8, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments. Just over 3 months later, on March 3, 2015, in an opinion written by Justice Thomas, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed and remanded the 10th Circuit's opinion. Justice Kennedy and Ginsburg each filed concurring opinions. Justice Breyer joined Justice Ginsburg's concurrence, and Justice Sotomayor joined Justice Ginsburg's concurrence in part. As stated previously, under the Tax Injunction Act, the federal courts shall not enjoin, suspend, or restrain assessment, levy, or collection of any tax under state law where a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the courts of the state. Thus, in examining the application of the Tax Injunction Act, the court essentially broke the act into three parts. First, whether the relief sought enjoins, suspends, or restrains, which the court answered in the affirmative, stating that an injunction is clearly a form of equitable relief barred by the act. Next, the court looked to whether the enforcement of the Colorado's notice and reporting law is an act of assessment, levy, or collection. The court answered in the negative. The court stated that it did not need to reach the third part of the analysis as to whether a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the court of Colorado. In determining that Colorado's notice and reporting law was not an act of assessment, levy, or collection, the court looked to the federal tax law as a guide, stating that although the Tax Injunction Act does not concern federal taxes, it was modeled after the Anti-Injunction Act, which does. The Anti-Injunction Act uses similar language, stating that no suit for purposes of restraining the assessment or collection of any tax shall be maintained in any court by any person. Thus, since the court has used federal tax laws to discern the meaning of terms in the Anti-Injunction Act, the court decided that it should use federal tax law in reading the Tax Injunction Act in light of the similarities between the Anti-Injunction Act and the Tax Injunction Act. The three terms, assessment, levy, and collection, are all distinct phases of the taxation process under the federal tax laws, which do not include information notices or private reports of information relevant to tax liability. Instead, tax information gathering is a phase that comes before assessment, levy, and collection. The court noted that enforcement of Colorado's notice and reporting law might aid in Colorado's ability to assess and ultimately collect its sales and use tax. It was not part of the assessment and collection phase, as Colorado's Department of Revenue executive director argued. Notwithstanding, the court noted that in applying the Tax Injunction Act to Colorado's notice and reporting law would be inconsistent with both the text of the act and with the court's ruling of favoring clear boundaries in text of jurisdictional statutes. Further, the court interpreted the meaning of the word restrain in the act very narrowly, stating that a suit cannot be understood to restrain the assessment, levy, or collection of state tax if it merely inhibits these activities. In other words, just because it makes assessment, levy, or collections more difficult, it doesn't mean it restrains it. Accordingly, the court unanimously held that the Tax Injunction Act did not bar Direct Marketing Association's federal lawsuit against the Colorado Department of Revenue. However, the court noted in regards to a footnote in the 10th Circuit's opinion that the comity doctrine might apply, that it would not take a position on the comity doctrine and remanded the case back to the 10th Circuit to decide whether or not the comity doctrine applies and the merits of the claims if the suit withstands the comity doctrine. The comity doctrine limits federal courts' review of state law issues by counseling lower federal courts to resist engagement in certain cases falling under its jurisdiction, thus from interfering with the fiscal operations of the state governments in all cases where the federal rights of a person could otherwise be preserved unimpaired. Thus, we'll just have to wait and see if the 10th Circuit on remand rules that the comity doctrine applies and thus it cannot hear the merits of the case, or rules conversely that the comity doctrine does not apply and then hears the merit of the case. Either way, there's a good chance this case could end back in the Supreme Court. But in my humble opinion, what was more important than the opinion was Justice Kennedy's concurrence, in which he sent an invitation to the legal community to bring a case to the court to re-examine the physical presence standard in light of the growth of online business. Justice Kennedy started his concurrence by stating that while he agreed with the opinion of the court, quote, it was appropriate and indeed necessary to add a separate statement concerning what may well be a serious continuing injustice faced by Colorado and many other states. That the court had its chance in Quill to reevaluate previous cases in light of the dramatic technological and society changes, but failed to do so in part due to its deference given to previous holdings. Justice Kennedy went on to state that now was the time to reevaluate physical presence, stating that the argument has grown stronger that a retailer doing extensive business within a state has a sufficiently substantial nexus to justify some minor tax collection duty, even if that business is done through mail and the internet. That at the time of Quill, the internet was in its infancy, and U.S. mail order sales totaled only $180 billion. But in 2008, e-commerce alone totaled $3.16 trillion per year in the U.S. And because of the restrictions of Quill, states are unable to collect substantial sales and use tax revenues. Thus, if the 10th Circuit rules that the comity doctrine does not apply and accordingly reviews the merits of the case and reverses the lower court by stating that the Dormant Commerce Clause doesn't apply, there is a chance that Justice Kennedy might just get his wish, a case appropriate for the court to re-examine Quill in light of the changes in technological and consumer sophistication. So we'll just have to wait and see how much longer the physical presence test survives.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.